Hello and welcome in.
First Science.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio. Good morning. You are listening to Science Mixtape with me, Matilda Hay. And this week, we're joined by our very own material girl, Anna Plajewski.
You know that we are living in the material world, and I am a material girl.
Materials are all around us, but how often do we really notice them and really appreciate the different jobs they're able to do? Anna is a material scientist from UCL whose current research looks at hydrogen storage materials, but her interests in materials reach far and wide, which makes her the perfect tour guide for our show today. She takes us on a materials safari through the wondrous world of materials science. Good morning, Anna.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm very excited to be here.
Now, some of our listeners might not know what materials science is. It's not something we really talk about at school, so could you just give us a brief summary?
Sure. So materials science sort of sits in the middle of the Venn diagram between engineering, physics and chemistry. And as a materials scientist, what I do is I look at the properties of materials, so those might be electronic, the strength of materials, magnetism, all those sorts of things. And I relate those to the atomic structure of the materials. So what are the atoms doing inside there? And once we understand what the atoms are doing, then we can understand why the materials are behaving as they are, sort of at the human level at which we interact with them day to day.
So it's looking at the structure to understand why they behave the way they do.
Exactly.
And then maybe changing it to change the way
they behave. Yes, and engineering new materials to do new and exciting things.
Amazing. Well, all aboard for our audio adventure. We'll be exploring metals, plastics and concrete, to name but a few. And as always, our second stop will involve an experiment. So if you want to take part at home, all you need for this one is a glass of water, a plastic shot glass, salt, matches, and a 9-volt battery. And providing our car journey entertainment today is producer Yaz with our weekly brain teaser.
Yes, so this week's brain teaser, if you can get it, don't forget to tweet us at Science Mixtape or at Soho Radio. So here it is. It's, if you put a coin into an empty bottle and insert a cork into the neck, how can you remove the coin without removing the cork or breaking the bottle?
Ooh.
Oh.
That is a really hard one this week.
Yeah.
So this reminds me of the sort of, hungover science experiments we used to do at university on like a Saturday morning.
Yeah, we've got all your instructions and you just can't seem to get from A to B. It's like, I don't understand it. Okay, well, I think we're ready to go. Anna, I believe your songs are going to guide us through our materials. So what is your first song?
Indeed.
And so why?
Our first song is from really a sort of modern days sort of materials philosopher, really. In this song, he touches on the strength of materials and how they can be used for real life applications. So this is David Guetta with Titanium.
Titanium golf clubs cause fires. This is by sending out 3,000 degree Fahrenheit sparks when striking small rocks on the ground. These sparks can then ignite dry grass, causing fires.
I never knew it could be so dangerous.
I didn't. There's another cool fact about titanium. It's one of the only metals which is considered to be biocompatible.
What does that mean?
So that means the body won't reject it. So most biocompatible materials tend to be plastics because these are most similar to sort of the proteins and the biological materials that we have in our own bodies. But titanium is, titanium has been found to be one of the only metals that is biocompatible.
Wow.
So gold and silver are also biocompatible, but they're obviously much more expensive.
Yeah.
So titanium tends to be used in sort of bone reconstruction or hip implants to replace bone. That's because it's got very well-matched sort of physical properties.
Because it's also really strong, like bone as well, isn't
it? Exactly, exactly. So the alloy that they tend to use, for all the geeks out there, is 6% aluminium and 4% vanadium and titanium.
Wow, I've never even heard of vanadium. So, titanium is a metal. That means our first stop on our Materials Safari tour is metals. Anna, tell me about metals.
Well, so titanium is actually a relatively young metal. It was only isolated in 1910, so just over 100 years ago. But metallurgy, which is the study of metals, is really one of the oldest sciences that we have as a human race. So up to 7,000 years ago, people were putting rocks in fires and getting out shiny metals. So they could do that with copper and tin and lead ores that they could find.
The ones that we mine for, yeah, absolutely.
Indeed. And then around 3,500 BC, somebody realised that combining copper with tin made a much stronger material.
Oh, is this the first alloy?
Yes, this is bronze, and that represented the beginning of the Bronze Age.
Oh, no way! That's so cool.
So sort of throughout history, materials kind of represent the state of the art. And so, you know, we call it the Bronze Age, we've got the Stone Age, the Iron Age. So they sort of divide up technology that we have as a human race into materials, which I think is really cool.
Yeah. And so in terms of the study of metals and metallurgy and making these alloys, how does that work? How do people do that?
So really, you've kind of hit on the crux of metallurgy. There's two main approaches to creating alloys. The first is combining different metals together. And the second is heat treatment. So I kind of think like metallurgy is sort of a bit like baking, right? You've got your whole periodic table of ingredients available to you. And you can also cook at different temperatures. You can cool down. You can manipulate. You can knead dough.
You can add in like different extra flavouring type things.
Absolutely. So metallurgy is kind of like the Great British Bake Off of science.
I love it. It's such a cool analogy. And metals themselves are quite special materials, aren't they? Because, I mean, we learn at school they're the only ones that conduct heat and electricity.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, all materials do, but metals are particularly good at
conduct it well. Yeah.
Absolutely, so, absolutely. And so, I mean, those are just two reasons why we have metals all around us today. They're extremely useful. They're also very hard. They're very strong. So, yeah.
Have you ever worked with metals yourself?
Not really. The only example of a metal that I've worked with was an enormous copper pipe where I made an experiment called a Rubens tube, which is a tube which is filled with propane. And I drilled
a gas, right?
Yes, yes, a flammable gas, very dangerous. Drilled a load of holes along the top, light the propane. So you've got a series of flames along the top of the copper tube. I then put a rubber membrane on the end and played my trumpet against that. And this experiment is all to do with visualising sound in fire. So what happens when you play sound against the membrane is you transfer the sound wave into the propane. Now, sound is just areas of high and low air pressure. So what you end up with is areas of high and low propane pressure in the tube. And so so the flames go up and down depending on the propane pressure.
Oh, my God, that is so cool. That is an excellent use of metal. But you don't work with metals normally, you actually work with hydrogen.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's my research area of my PhD. So the next song that we're going to hear is, I couldn't resist putting a Beyoncé number in. It's 1+1, the reason being that hydrogen has atomic number 1.
And while we're listening to it, I believe you've bought a car that is powered by hydrogen.
Yeah, that's right. I've got a little demo kit here. And what we're going to do while we listen to the song is split water into hydrogen and oxygen and then use that hydrogen after the song to power this little car.
Stay tuned.
I don't know much about algebra, but I know 1+1=2. And it's me and you. World is through, 'cause baby we ain't got nothing without love. Darling, you got
About 10% of the weight of living organisms is hydrogen, mainly in water, proteins and fats.
Pretty fundamental material there, isn't it?
Absolutely. Hydrogen is the most abundant element that we have in the universe.
Oh, wow. Yeah, of course. I suppose that's what stars are formed from.
Yeah, and it's the simplest one. It's just got a proton and an electron in it.
Yeah, one plus one.
Okay.
So while that song was playing, Anna has brought in this tiny and amazing looking little car that is powered by hydrogen.
That's absolutely right.
Tell me more about it. So it's got, as I can see, it's got kind of four wheels like normal, but then it's also got these two mini beakers of fluid with a kind of bell jar in each of them that holds gas.
Yes.
Talk me through it.
So what we've got here, this little square is called an electrolyzer. And what that does is it takes electricity and it takes water. And what it does is it uses the electricity to split the water into the two gases, hydrogen and oxygen, H2O. And those gases are what you can see in the bell jars at the back of the car there.
So they get fed through these tubes and stored in the bell jars. Yes.
Exactly. So this is a completely green way of creating hydrogen, right? Assuming that you've taken your electricity from a renewable energy source.
Absolutely.
That's a big caveat. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to connect up the electrolyzer the other way around. So it's now a hydrogen fuel cell. So it does the reverse. So a hydrogen fuel cell takes hydrogen and oxygen, combines them together to make water and electricity. And that electricity is going to power our car here.
Amazing. Okay, let's see it in action. So Anna is now changing the fuel cell, the electrolyzer around, so it is now a fuel cell. She's collecting her wires and inserting it into the car. And
the car is about to drive off the table.
Oh, it's so cute. It has flashing blue lights and it's moving around.
It also reverses and goes forward completely unpredictably. And I've created a flood with the water as well.
Purring a bit like a cat.
So yeah, this is a brilliant demonstration of how hydrogen can be used in a portable way to power a moving vehicle with completely green energy.
And this is what your research is, isn't it? So you are looking at how we can use hydrogen and store it in a way so it can be used to power cars.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So in this example, we've got hydrogen in a little bell jar on the back of the car.
And it's as a gas.
And that's as a gas, exactly. So hydrogen is brilliant for portable applications like cars or personal devices or UAVs because it's extremely light, right? It's the lightest element that we have. One of the problems with it is that, as you say, it's a gas. So how do you carry around a gas with you? Well, in this example, we've got it in a little cylinder.
Or a balloon, you could have it.
You could have it in a balloon. However, at standard temperature and pressure, so as the atmosphere is around us, you would need a balloon, I think I calculated it once, like 6 meters across to drive a car any appreciable distance, right? Which is pretty unlikely and quite inconvenient.
That would make London hilarious. All these cars with like balloons hanging out of their boots.
Indeed. So what can you do? Well, you can compress it into a smaller volume at higher pressure. So that's what lots of hydrogen powered cars on the road do at the moment. There's a hydrogen powered bus in London at the moment. The route,
really?
The RV1.
The RV1!
Indeed. So if you have a look at that bus, if you ever are in a building above it, you can see the hydrogen gas cylinders are strapped to the top of the bus.
Oh, my God.
You'll also notice that they are enormous. So if you wanted a hydrogen gas cylinder in a car, it would kind of take up
all the rim,
all of the boot, effectively. Yeah. So it works. It's fine. It's a reversible method of storing and releasing hydrogen into your fuel cell. But it's not ideal for all situations. If you have pressures on space, for example, you want to be able to store your hydrogen much more densely.
Yes.
So that's what I do. I look at storing hydrogen in solid materials. Now, these materials intrinsically contain hydrogen. Another example of a hydrogen storage material is water, H2O.
Of course, yeah. And that's where we got it from. We split the water to get the gas originally.
Exactly. The material that I work on, for anyone interested, is called ammonia borane. It's a white solid. It contains a lot of hydrogen and it can release that hydrogen in a chemical reaction when you heat it up to around 100 degrees Celsius.
Okay.
And so this has multiple benefits, including the fact that you can store much more hydrogen in a much smaller volume. However, there are loads of problems with it, which is why I am doing a PhD in it. Problems include the fact that it doesn't just release its hydrogen, it releases all sorts of other nasty gases as well.
Ooh, okay, yeah.
the main problem is that it's a unreversible reaction. So it releases hydrogen and then that's it. You've got...
You can't put it back in.
Right. Apart from with a quite involved chemical process. So this is really the reason why my materials aren't on the roads today, is because unlike a gas cylinder, which you can just refill with hydrogen with a nozzle, this material requires quite an involved chemical process.
It's not really reusable yet in a market sense.
Exactly.
Ah, and you've brought some of this material with you today, haven't
you? Would you like to have a look?
I would love to have a look. I'm trying my best to describe it. Okay.
So this is two samples from the lab that I brought for you today.
Okay, so they are very white. The first one, it's kind of solid and like flat. I feel like it's a bit like Play-Doh that's been kind of rolled out. Mm-hmm. You can kind of squish it, but it is still definitely solid.
Yeah.
Okay, and then this one is... listeners, the best way I can describe it is it looks like squashed candy floss.
Mm-hmm.
But when you press it, it's harder than candy floss.
Yes.
But it does have that fluffy quality at the edges.
So, yeah, this is a very porous material. What my approach with the PhD has been to combine this hydrogen storage material with a plastic. And the benefits of that is that it becomes this sort of spongy solid. And if you wanted to engineer this material into a usable system, you need to have it in a form which is much more easy to work with than a powder, which is how the material comes normally. So as you can see, this is a solid material. It's spongy, so we can press it into all sorts of different shapes. And that makes it really good for engineering into a working system.
And does it change any... Does it make it easier to release the hydrogen as well?
Yes, it does. So it reduces the hydrogen release temperature, which makes your system
more so you don't
efficient.
Have to get it as hot.
Exactly.
Ah.
And it also stops the material from foaming up as much. So when hydrogen is released from the storage material normally, the material actually melts just before it releases the hydrogen. So you end up releasing a gas from a liquid, and so it bubbles everywhere and it's really messy. Whereas this material... stops it from melting before hydrogen release. So you're releasing it from more like a solid material, which stops it going everywhere.
So clever. And that's just from changing the atomic structure of the material you're working with.
Yeah, so it's to do with bonding the two materials together and modifying the hydrogen release.
Wow. Well, listeners at home, I did promise you an experiment on this stop. And so what we are going to be trying to do is release hydrogen ourselves. And we don't have a proper electrolysis cell like Anna brought with her car. But what we do have is a 9-volt battery and salt water. So if you are at home, you get your cup and we are going to pour in some water. And then you want to add quite a generous amount of salt. And this is just normal table salt. It's absolutely fine. Oop, that may have been even a little too much. give it a stir so it all dissolves in.
The words "it's absolutely fine" is like a classic "this is a science thing that could go wrong" thing to say.
And then you want to take your 9-volt battery, and what you're going to do is you're going to just drop it into the water, and you should see straight away a stream of bubbles rising up from one of the electrode points on your battery. And the reason this is happening is because battery is basically like two reservoirs of charge, a positive and a negative. And when salt dissolves in water, it kind of makes charged particles, and they'll be attracted to the positive or negative sides of the battery. And when that happens and it gets to the right place and it receives the charge from the battery, it splits the water while it does that, and this will release your hydrogen gas. Okay, so I'm going to drop it in and we'll see if we get some bubbles.
Yeah, we can see some bubbles there.
It's so cool. It's bubbling so straight away. Like really like a whole stream of them coming off. Okay, so I'm going to put the shot glass on top. So first submerge your shot glass, there's no other air in it. And put, and it should start to capture the hydrogen. Now we're going to let that bubble for a little bit and collect our gas. And once we've collected it, we should be able to burn it and test if it really was hydrogen.
Yes, and can you remember how hydrogen burns?
I can, with a squeaky pop.
That's exactly right.
So while we're waiting to collect our gas, what is song number three and why?
Well, I've chosen song number three because to me it represents the complex emotions that we all have around materials. So this is a song about hope, really. She sings about how the concrete jungle is a place of hope. However, to my ears, it kind of the song has a lot of sort of sadness. She speaks about poverty as well. So this is a representation of how a single material can make us feel all sorts of complex emotions. This is Alicia Keys with Empire State of Mind.
Romans were the first to develop concrete as a building material. The Pantheon in Rome is still the largest unreinforced concrete dome.
Concrete. So I have always just thought concrete is, you know, it looks a bit ugly, it's kind of quite boring. And then a couple of years ago, I spoke to an architect who was like, it is my favourite material ever. Like, what is so cool about concrete?
Well, concrete is so fascinating, partly because, as Yaz says, it's a really old material. So what happens when you make concrete is you combine cement, you combine what's called an aggregate, which is usually just like little rocks or sand or that kind of thing, and water. Now, a lot of people, when they see concrete being poured, it's a wet sort of fluid material, which you can then mould into.
You see it like turning in the, on the side of the street. Yeah.
And so what you would think is, like, as it solidifies and you're thinking of it drying out, but that's actually not what's happening. What's happening is that there's a chemical reaction called hydration, which happens between the cement and the water, and that is what hardens the material. So
are they taking the water in to themselves?
Yes, exactly. So it's reacting with the water in order to grow.
And absorbing it into the structure.
Yes, exactly.
So that's why it looks like it dries.
Exactly, and it grows new, strong crystals inside the material, which is where the hardness and the strength comes from. And so, for example, this reaction occurs relatively slowly. So you've got a few hours to pour your concrete and fix it into the shape that you want before it starts to harden. And buildings are hardening years after they are initially
poured. Oh, really?
Poured.
They're still years
Absolutely.
Later still hardening?
So the Shard in London is still getting harder and stronger as we speak.
And, like, every time it rains, would it be getting harder with the rain, or it's just getting harder over time?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, the whole structure is getting harder over time. Exactly.
How would you say concrete has changed the world that we live in?
Well, I think it's probably one of the materials that has had the greatest impact in terms of our built environment, certainly.
Mm.
You know, it facilitates roads, it facilitates cities, it's really mobilised us. But there's also a negative side to concrete. It is a huge producer of greenhouse gases. So actually around 5% of all CO2 released is concrete is responsible for.
No way.
And that's really due to the production of cement. So the production of cement releases a lot of carbon dioxide, but it also consumes a huge amount of energy. So those are the two reasons why it releases a lot of CO2. Not only is it an ugly material, but it's also pretty bad for the environment too.
And also to pick up on the way that you introduced the song, I'd never thought about materials making us emotional, but I suppose that actually when you're in a city, you're surrounded by a lot of brick and concrete, and we crave outdoor spaces and we crave those more natural materials.
Absolutely. I mean, look at how we furnish our houses, right? We have wooden furniture, we have soft furnishings. These kind of materials make us feel homely and warm and safe and secure, whereas I know a lot of people will feel lonely in a big city. These materials are very hard, they're very faceless. There's no features on a concrete wall or a glass window.
Absolutely. And another material that's all around us, and I suppose is also kind of quite controversial in an energy way or a greenhouse gas way, is plastics.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, plastics are incredible and they've changed our lives so much. Again, they've only been around for just over 100 years. So the change has been monumental. they, but as you say, they are have a lot of negative implications as well. The Ellen MacArthur Foundation predicted that by 2050 there will be more plastic in the sea than there will be fish, which is a very scary statistic indeed.
Yeah, it's awful to think of that.
That's all to do with the fact that plastic is not biodegradable. But there are options. You can get bioplastics, which are derived from natural materials like cornstarch, and these plastics are biodegradable.
So we're starting to kind of move towards that way.
Yeah, that is true. However, it's actually not as black and white as being biodegradable, therefore better for the environment. If you take the example of plastic bags, plastics are derived from petroleum. So we're taking up fossil fuels from the ground and putting them into plastics. But that's where they stay. Normal plastic bags don't biodegrade and release their CO2 back into the atmosphere. Whereas a paper bag, for example, will biodegrade and will release that CO2 into the atmosphere. So it's kind of the trade-off between, do you want the carbon in the atmosphere or do you want it in the landfills?
Stored in your plastic.
Absolutely.
Ah, I'd never thought of it like that. So if we just made loads of plastic, we'll be like a giant carbon sink.
Absolutely.
How was it first invented? Because you say it's only 100 years old.
Yes. So actually the first plastics were invented because snooker became really popular sort of the 1860s. And they used ivory for snooker balls because it was a material that was
hard and smooth.
You could smooth it, you could shape it into perfect ball shapes. And so really the popularity of snooker was increasing the price of ivory hugely. So the New York Times actually advertised a $10,000 reward for anyone that could come up with an alternative material to ivory.
Oh my God, amazing.
A material called celluloid was the first plastic which was invented for this particular purpose. And then since then, you know, a whole host of plastics have been invented and they are all around us today. Our world would be very different without plastics.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's the fact that they're waterproof. It makes them, well, for me, I find like that's one, the use that stands out the most is the fact they're waterproof.
Yeah, so new fabrics and textiles made of plastics have been hugely important in terms of waterproofing, creating cheap materials for clothes and that kind of thing. Yeah, elastics.
Well, it's only appropriate to have your next song.
So this song is probably my least favourite choice of all of the songs, but I've chosen it because it kind of represents one of those facets of plastics that we've been talking about, which is sort of materialism and
consumerism.
Yeah. And again, talking about the emotions behind materials, this song represents the fakeness of plastic.
Come on, Barbie, let's go party.
The last 10 years, we have produced more plastic than during the whole of the last century.
News just in. Nutella contraceptives combat grey squirrels.
Synthetic tooth enamel may lead to more resilient structures.
Superbugs posing greatest threat to humanity identified by the World Health Organization.
An empathy device lets a friend's brain signals move your arm.
Sound-shaping supermaterial invented.
7 Earth-sized planets found orbiting a nearby supercool star.
Amazing range of stories this week. Straight off, Anna, I just want to ask you about this tooth enamel, this synthetic tooth enamel.
Yeah, so one of the major problems in materials is that materials which usually absorb vibration tend to be very soft. So a good example is rubber. That's tends to be used as sort of a dampener in all sorts of applications. These tend to be very soft. So it would be brilliant if we could invent a hard and strong material that still absorbs vibrations. And that's exactly what researchers have done. And they've done this by looking to the natural world to see what materials has nature developed for this sort of application. And they found that tooth enamel is extremely good and extremely hard, but also absorbs vibrations.
So it's kind of like biomimicry, but with our own tooth enamel.
Absolutely. And yeah, the researcher that led this study actually used his own tooth that had been extracted
For the study, or it was just extracted anyway?
Oh no, for the study, I believe.
Oh my God. Yeah. That is commitment to your research.
Dedication.
So yeah, this my favourite story this week was this empathy device that lets a friend's brain signals move your arm. It just sounds to me like I can totally see the whole kind of VR game playing situation going a lot further if this takes off. Basically, it was in the University of Hanover in Germany. They wired up four people to a machine that records your brain activity, and they watched film clips to provoke certain emotions: amusement, anger, and sadness. So they were the emotion setters. They were like being made to feel these emotions, and they were each paired with an emotional recipient who wore electrodes on their arms, stimulating the muscles that went with these emotions. And they were then, their arms would do a certain gesture according, so for anger, their hand would shape a claw. And the idea was that this movement would then help them to feel the emotion of the other person. So there's been some criticism in that, like, you could have a claw shape for a lot of other things, and why would it necessarily make you feel anger? But I think the idea that one person's brain signals can cause movement in another is really interesting.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So, yeah, my favourite story this week has to be the Earth-sized planets that have been found orbiting a not-so-distant supercool star. So there are seven of them all orbiting this one star called TRAPPIST-1. And obviously it's going to be this prime target now for the search for alien life. And it also is quite an interesting discovery because it means that there may be even more Earth-like planets than we first thought. So what's interesting about these planets is the innermost one's the one closest to the star. It takes 1.5 Earth days to go around the sun. So,
not even that different from our own environment.
No, to orbit the whole sun.
Oh, sorry, John, not to spin on itself. Yeah. Sorry.
But then
that's really quick.
you got ahead of me. So the interesting thing is it orbits as well. Where it spins on its axis, takes 1.5 Earth days. So a year and a day on all of these planets are the same.
So does that mean that one side of the planet is always day and one side is always night?
I don't know. Depends, I guess.
If they spin in the same direction.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. So yeah, that's fascinating to me. I hope we find lots of aliens. And of course, NASA have kind of semi-jokingly, considering what's happened in the past, opened up the opportunity to name these planets.
So, Spinny McSpin planet. Yeah.
Planet McPlanet Phase 1, Planet McPlanet Phase 2.
Anna, your second story, a sound-shaping supermaterial.
Yes, so this is an example of what is called a metamaterial. And metamaterials are engineered sort of structures which can carry out a particular purpose. So a few years ago, there was real excitement surrounding a metamaterial which could act as an invisibility cloak because it manipulated light in such a way that it bent light around an object that was behind it. So this is a similar thing, but except it's with sound. So this metamaterial is made up of all little 3D printed blocks which are coil shaped. And these coils interact with sound in such a way that the sound can be manipulated and shaped and pointed in all sorts of different directions.
Oh, so like focusing the sound the way a microscope might focus light or something?
Absolutely.
That's really cool. Do they know what kind of, why they would want to focus the sound?
Also, one application that they've picked out is in ultrasound therapy. So that if they could focus very, very high energy ultrasound beams onto a tumour inside a patient, they might be able to kill that tumour with sound by focusing the waves.
Wow, that is awesome. Yaz, your next story.
Okay, so yeah, this one isn't quite as fun as the last one. So this one's about the terrifying prospect of increased antibiotic resistance. So the World Health Organization have made a list of the 12 types of bacteria which they think pose the greatest threat to human health in the future for developing resistance to almost all antibiotics. And at the moment, around 700,000 people a year die due to drug-resistant infections. And they're saying that if no action is taken, that could be up to 10 million people a year by the year 2050. And I think they're kind of announcing this to maybe push it to the fore instead of maybe relying on pharmaceutical companies to come up with the ideas themselves. So let's hope.
It's crazy to think, you know, we're living in this world where we can control so many things and, you know, all these amazing materials we're talking about, and yet the superbugs are going to come back and bite us.
Absolutely. It's terrifying.
My final story, a bit of, I just found this one hilarious. So there's a grey squirrel, like, epidemic in Britain. They're not native here, and they act kind of like a pest. They are both killing trees by chewing around their bases, and they are spreading a disease which they are immune to, but which is killing the native red squirrels, whose numbers have dropped from 3.5 million in the 1950s to only 135,000 today. Grey squirrels now outnumber them 10 to 1. And so the UK's Animal and Plant Health Agency have come up with a plan, and they're going to give the grey squirrels contraceptives to stop them from breeding. And the way they're going to do it is they're going to make a special trap, which only the grey squirrels will be able to open because they're stronger than the red squirrels. And they're going to put loads of Nutella in this trap, but they're going to spike the Nutella with Gonacon, which is a contraceptive that's been 90% effective in rats. And Prince Charles is backing this because he loves red squirrels and he wants to make them the UK mascot.
Yeah, that made for a brilliant headline. Prince Charles is going to make contraceptives out of
forcibly sterilised squirrels.
Wow.
Right, well, on to your next song, Anna.
Okay, now bear with me because this is a bit of a tenuous link.
We love a tenuous link here on Science.
So this is the film soundtrack to a film which I used to love watching with my brother, and we would make a four every Saturday morning and watch this particular film. I've chosen it also because I am a trumpet player and it contains some amazing trumpet lines. I wanted to include a classical or orchestral piece, but I thought that this might be more popular than some of my other potential choices. It's to do with materials because one of the brilliant lines from the film is when someone is about to be mauled by a raptor and they say, "Clever girl." And so the next sort of materials that we're going to be talking about are clever materials, or as they're also known as, smart materials. So this is the end credits to Jurassic Park by John Williams.
Smart materials detect changes in their environment and react to them. In the future, we may have clothes that automatically change according to the weather, or wall paint we can immediately change to our taste.
So we've come to our final stop on our materials safari, the cleverest of them all, smart materials. Anna, tell me about these.
Indeed. So smart materials are materials which react to their environment. So they have a property, for example, their colour, their magnetism, their electronic properties, and these will change in response to a change in the environment, for example, the light levels, the temperature, or the amount of moisture. So Yaz just mentioned about using smart textiles. So this would be an example where your coat of the future would react to your body temperature to be more or less insulating.
Wow.
It would react to the rain to become more...
I guess we already have those glasses which can tint if you're in the sun.
Absolutely right. That's an example of a smart material that we use today.
I once was at a gig and the guy in the front row, the stage light was on his face, and so his glasses were just permanently in sunglass mode.
Yeah, not such a smart material after all.
These are really exciting. Can you give me a picture of the sort of future that you imagine?
Well, smart materials are going to be everywhere. One really exciting example is in our cities. We spoke earlier about concrete. In the future, our roads will be made of self-healing concrete. Our buildings will be made of self-healing concrete. And this is a smart material that can identify a crack and heal itself without any sort of human interaction.
No way. How does it do that?
So there are various sorts of methods, but one of the most popular ones that is spoken about involves bacteria. So what you do is you embed a type of bacteria into your concrete. And here it remains dormant for the majority of the concrete's lifetime. Yeah, it can survive for up to 200 years in this state. And what happens is when a crack develops, then rainwater and atmospheric water infiltrate that crack. And when the bacteria...
get the air and the water, do they sort of wake up?
Exactly, they become activated by the water. Also embedded in the material is something called calcium lactate, which these bacteria find particularly delicious. Calcium lactate is it's the sort of white crystals that you get on cheese that you've left in the fridge for too long.
Yeah, when it gets that kind of coat.
I mean, so they love this stuff. They will eat up all the calcium lactate and excrete limestone, and that limestone fills in the crack in the concrete.
That's amazing and gives a whole new idea to biomaterials as well. Like you're actually using bacteria.
Absolutely. So potholes will be a thing of the past. And this material will also be really useful in areas of the world that are particularly prone to sort of seismic activity. So earthquakes and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So cracks in buildings from earthquakes could self-heal.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's so cool. And I've just noticed you're wearing a concrete necklace.
I am, yeah. This is my concrete necklace, which I bought from an artist in Walthamstow. The reason I like it is because it's sort of quite inconspicuous. Mm. And lots of people wouldn't associate concrete with
jewellery.
A material that could be, yeah, beautiful as jewellery. I could actually do some self-healing concrete on this because as I've been walking around, it's chipping away slowly. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to self-healing jewellery in the future as well.
Now, we before left ourselves bubbling away with some hydrogen. So I think it's time to see if... we have indeed captured it enough to burn.
Yes, so I'm just going to lift up our little cup with the hydrogen in, and Matilda is going to... Are you ready?
I'm just going to light my match.
Oh, hang on. Yeah, I'm just going to undo this little thing.
Oh, there we go.
Ready? Okay. Listen for the squeaky pop.
Woo!
Did you hear it? That's it. That's gone. That's it. It wasn't that squeaky. It was more like a bang.
It was a good pop, though.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, one of the things that people, lots of people don't like about hydrogen is the fact that it does bang, right? It does explode.
I have once had to set on light a hydrogen balloon, and it was the loudest thing I've ever done.
It's
it was
pretty
in a
terrifying.
Classroom.
Yeah.
Wow, so loud.
Yeah. And so that's one of sort of the major public perception issues surrounding hydrogen, which hydrogen researchers sort of have to overcome.
Mm, it's really flammable and it's really explosive. I mean, we have hydrogen bombs, don't we?
Exactly. That's something slightly different. That's not burning hydrogen. That's to do with like combining heavy hydrogen into a nuclear fusion reaction.
Oh, okay.
So it's slightly different, but the name itself doesn't help people like me who are trying to put it in people's cars. Exactly. But I mean, hydrogen in cars is actually one of the safest fuels that you can use. The reason being that it's a gas, and so if you burn it, because it's so light, a bit like helium, it just flares upwards. So a hydrogen fire from a fuel tank in a car will flare upwards from the car, and actually the interior of the car doesn't even get particularly warm even. That to a petrol powered car, if you have a rupture in your fuel tank, that petrol as a liquid is going to sink onto the road, catch fire as a volatile liquid, and then burn your car from underneath.
And you're sat on a burning lake.
Absolutely. And so actually a study from the University of Miami hit a hydrogen-powered car and a petrol-powered car with a bullet from a gun, ruptured both fuel tanks, the fuel set on fire, and they filmed what happened, and that's exactly what happened. The hydrogen car was pretty much unscathed, whereas the petrol-powered car was like just a shell of a like burning car.
So one day we may all be driving around with hydrogen in our boots instead.
Yeah, there's a few problems still to be overcome. For example, the storage problem, the infrastructure problems. So there are not that many hydrogen refueling stations around. But these are not completely impossible tasks.
Yeah. And I guess that's why it's good for like buses, because they only need one refueling place. They're not going across the country.
Yeah. So there's lots of governments investing in hydrogen refueling stations. There's lots in California, Japan, Germany, and the UK as well. So we're starting to see them pop up. But obviously, if you compare it to an electric car, we've all got electricity. The infrastructure is already there. Well, not all of us actually have electricity, but a lot of people in the Western world have electricity easily accessed. Electric cars at the moment kind of are at the forefront of green energy vehicles, but hydrogen is not far behind.
Amazing. Now, final question for you. What do you think is the answer to our brain teaser? In fact, Yaz, would you mind just saying it once more?
Yeah, shall I remind you? Okay, so put a coin into an empty bottle and insert a cork into the neck. How can you remove the coin without removing the cork or breaking the bottle?
I mean, my only answer was going to be like, wait until the coin degrades so much over thousands of years that it like dissolves in the water and then...
But then you don't get the coin.
This is true. That was a really stupid answer.
My best guess is, do you put the bottle in some sort of room where the pressure changes are different enough that it explodes?
That would be great. And we've actually had a few people guess some variation on explosion. But no, unfortunately not. We've actually had loads of people tweeted with the right answer this time. So maybe I wasn't making it hard enough. So well done to Ben Wright and his 7-year-old and also Drum and Bass over Twitter. The answer is you push the cork into the bottle and then tip the coin out.
I've actually done that with a bottle of wine before.
Yeah, and there's a corkscrew. And I was just thinking, anyone who's been really stuck with a bottle of wine and no corkscrew can relate to this.
Should have got that one.
That's so simple. Wow.
Yeah, it's always simpler than you think, I guess.
Brilliant. Anna, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a wonderful safari. What is your final song to play us out
with? So my final song to play us out with is Raise Your Glass by Pink. This is to do with, obviously, glass. The reason I love this song is because it's about misfits. All right, as I mentioned earlier, I'm a trumpet player. I'm also a scientist. I spend my entire life surrounded in male-dominated environments. I've always been a bit of a misfit. There's fantastic feminist iconography in the video, and glass itself is a fascinating material. As we were talking about emotions earlier, we prefer to drink our beer out of glasses rather than plastic.
Yeah.
That's to do with the fact that it feels cold on our lips, and it sort of adopts the temperature of the liquid inside. Glass is a fascinating material. It's all around us.
I suppose when we're in a room as well, if we don't have a window, we feel really sad.
Absolutely.
It's like our connection to the outside world is a bit of glass.
Yeah, that's right. And it also keeps us safe from the outside world as well.
Yeah.
So again, it's a multifaceted emotional material. So I've chosen to play us out with Raise Your Glass by Pink.
For more Science Mixtape, you can find our shows on Audioboom, iTunes, or any other podcast provider. Or join us live every Saturday at 10 a.m. on Soho Radio, recently voted the best online radio station in the world. Science.